One.
Warning. DC on CW contains adult language and discussions. If you're easily offended, do not continue to listen.
My name is Oliver Queen.
You died. I went to your funeral.
The city would save
me. What happened to you? The right to remain silent.
I'm in the future.
My name is Barry Allen, and I'm the fastest man alive.
Supergirl.
You people become a team.
Hey, cuz.
It's good to see you.
This looks like a job for the both of us.
None of you will. Heroes. The legends. You have failed this city.
Welcome, you're listening to DC on CW Legends of Tomorrow edition on Rain Man Digital. If you're listening from your desktop, you can take us mobile by downloading the Rain Man Digital app, available in the iTunes App Store and Google Play. Simply search Rain Man Digital. You can also find us on demand through iTunes and Stitcher by searching DC on CW. And once you find us there, please go ahead and leave us a review. Tell us what you like.
Tell us
what you don't like. And we'd appreciate the feedback. The feedbooks.
Yeah.
All right. So today I'm your host, Lauren Alexander, and I have with me Bobby D.
Hello, hello.
It's just us. Yeah. Just us hanging out. Today we're going to be breaking down and discussing Legends of Tomorrow Season 3, Episode 3, Zari. Just short, sweet, and to the point with the episode title. Yeah. The Legends pick up the distress signal from Gary in 2042 Seattle.
Gary.
The city is under martial law of Argus, where metahumans are subject to immediate arrest. That's crazy.
Legends was I don't know. You know, last week it was just kind of weird with the P.T. Barnum thing.
Yeah, definitely.
And I was kind of nervous going into this week, and after I got done watching, I was like, oh, I feel better now. Because we were worried about, me and Mike brought it up, the season three curse. You know, get to season three and what the hell happens. I would be lying if I said that I was like, oh, don't worry, Legends won't fall into that same rut. Because it was weird last week. So.
Yeah, it was. I wasn't here for that show, but I mean, obviously I watched it. It's definitely a little weird.
Yeah.
For sure. So let's get started with some news here before we jump into breaking down this episode. We have an article from comicbook.com. Phil Klemmer teases a Legends of Tomorrow character death. All right. So that's immediately concerning, but it also sparks lots of questions in our minds. But, let's read some quotes from him here. Phil Klemmer said, all the legends are not going to be fine. I think that's something that we said very early on when we were talking about a show that we hadn't even made at Comic-Con 3 years ago. We said this show was an ensemble and it was one where we would have a rotating cast and that when people died, they would die in real life. I don't know what that means.
We're killing the actors.
The actors don't know it yet, but we're gonna murder them.
You signed in blood, you will die.
Good Lord. So it's been a long time since Hawkman got stabbed or whatever. It's been a long time since Hawk Girl flew away. Wait, didn't they both fly away? What the fuck happened? What show am I on? What's happening?
They disappeared.
Our show really got to be super funny last year, but I feel like you have to leave that comedy with some hardcore pathos and some real world stakes. All right. Well, I mean, let's talk about this. Let's make a death list. So obviously Stein.
Yeah. Stein jumps right to the top just because of them spoiling the fact that he's disappearing from the show, that he won't be a main cast member anymore. I don't know what they, you know, how they exactly worded it, you know.
So one of two things here. So they either let that slip because it's a red herring and he's not going to be the one to die, but he is going to leave.
And we know that.
Oh my God, what if Jax dies?
Oh, geez. And that's what sends him away.
And then he's like, there's nothing here for me anymore. I was here. You guys can still come for dinner, but.
Like, I was here for Jax.
That's like his surrogate son.
I could see that happening. The guy with really no superpowers.
No.
We never actually brought that up in the like.
No.
Any kind of like. Oh, with the Firestorm Matrix, if Stein leaves, they'll just find somebody to replace him or his daughter.
Okay.
Wow.
All right. So I think.
That's a good call.
I think they've done too much work developing Stein's life for him to die. Unless Lily replaces him. But now that she's pregnant, I don't think she's going anywhere. She's not going to leave her fucking infant, you know?
Yeah.
She's not going to leave her baby at home to go ride the Wave Rider. So I think. We've got three things here. Who makes the most sense? Who would hurt the most? And would killing any of them benefit the team? So first one, my vote, unfortunately, is that Jax would make the most sense because they really haven't built up anything about his personal life in the past three seasons. We know he has a mom and she worries about him and he played football, did he? Yeah, he played football and he really likes mechanical engineering stuff now. And but college isn't for him because he doesn't like it as much as actually doing it. And that's about it. That's all we've got.
I can't get over the Jax fucking call.
Yeah. So,
I don't know if I'm more upset that he might die or the fact that I didn't think of it first.
Ooh, I'm sorry. But for me, that's my vote on who makes the most sense because they've done too much work with Stein's personal life and him as a character going from Flash to now. I think it doesn't make sense to kill him. I think it makes sense for Jax to die, for that to be a catalyst for Stein leaving.
Yeah, because we both know he's only there for Jax.
Yeah. Honestly, like he loves the rest of the team, but not the way that he loves Jax because they have a special bond. And that's legitimately like that's like his adopted son, you know, before he had a daughter. He was like a second father to Jax. All right. Who would hurt the most? Bob, I'll let you say words first.
For me, it would be Mick. If Mick died, I think that would kind of like. Hurt the feels for me because he's like my favorite character on the show.
Yeah, I gotta agree with you.
And the one that's kind of grown the most and grown on me because before, you know, when it started, I was just like, this is, you know, this character wasn't very good, wasn't well written at all. It was just kind of like an oaf with a freaking fire gun. And now he's turned it into something that I enjoy seeing and watching. And it, like, I know I can't quit the show, but it would be one of those ones where, like, if Mick dies, I'm fucking protest, you know.
We riot.
I'm starting to change that org on him.
I gotta agree with you. Mick and Stein are the two characters that have had the most development and the most change that we've seen, and they've grown the most. But at the same time, I don't have the same level of attachment to Stein as I think I do to Mick.
Yeah.
Especially watching him go through everything with Snart. I think that would be the big hurt to see that. We've watched Sarah die like 2-3 times. It's fine.
Yeah. If another Lance Ray dies, we'll just figure they're coming back.
Yeah. We've already seen Ray die.
Amaya and them are too new.
Heywood and Amaya, like Nathaniel. I think we'd, I think they're too new for it to really hurt the way that it would.
Unless they died together in some kind of like.
That's okay.
Love moment.
Zari's definitely too new.
Yeah. We're going to introduce our first Muslim superhero, and now she's going to die one episode later.
Fuck it, nerds.
We did it first, though.
All right. Would killing any of them benefit the team? I think if Mick died, that would wreck the team, and it would spiral them down. It would not progress them and propel them forward.
No.
No.
The only reason I wrote that question was because the Hawk people were so fucking bad in the first season.
Yeah, but now everyone rocks.
Yeah. And so that would, you know, when if they would have been like, who do you want to kill on the team? I would have been like, Hawk girl. She sucks. She sucks. Who said that? But no, I would, I like, you know, that would be instantly. I don't have that feeling of like, if so-and-so was to get killed off, I would be so much happier with the show.
Yeah.
And that's good for the show because that means they've done proper by every single character, especially with, you know, the ensemble cast. They've spent enough time to make you actually care about each and every one of them.
Yeah. I just don't think that at this point anyone is a detriment to the team to the point of, you know, their death would make the team better.
It better be a major character. It better not be like, oh my God, I can't believe Gary died.
Dude, it's Jax. It's got to be Jax.
It's got to be Jax.
He dropped out of school. He doesn't seem like he has anything going on for him at home. Svein's leaving. It's got to be Jax.
Yep. And that, like you said, that would be the catalyst to get him off the ship. I'm not here for anybody else anymore.
Well, that and like that takes away the question of what is Jax without Stein for the ship, you know? And I mean, he's a great
then
mechanic, but
puts the question on what is Stein without Jax?
All right. Let's go to a break so we can cry.
The Scarlet Speedster. Any preference on how you'd like to die?
DC on CW. We'll be right back.
The Rain Man Show.
The Rain Man Show.
Yeah, I'm starting to wonder that we may truly have some power.
Why can't we target this and use it for good?
I know. Why can't we push a show back and Kim K dies?
It's the Rain Man Show and you like her ass too much.
You know what? Maybe that's what it is. Maybe I don't believe in it.
Did anybody know?
You know how like they say you have to believe in the power of prayer? Maybe in my mind.
There you go.
I dislike Kim. But my little mind is like, no, keep her alive. You may have a chance someday. And that's for some reason
slightly British.
Yes.
For more Rain Man, visit rainmanshow.com.
Hey, ass butt.
I like how it's like violent confrontation.
It sounds like daytime television.
It does. Yeah, it does.
A little bit.
It's like Castiel, the Bold and the Beautiful.
It's like...
Maybe that's the spinoff. Daytime television, here we come.
God, no.
Don't, gonna give Ellen a run for her money.
Do not say that.
That'd be funny. I'd watch it. All overexposed video look.
Like soft lighting and dramatic shots.
That's sheer talent there.
Oh, yeah. Sheer talent. Wait a second. Didn't Jared get his start on daytime television?
Yeah.
I think he did.
His start.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And they quickly left that behind.
Yeah. When they realized he was too good for them.
They're like, why is this guy here?
Shit, this guy's way too good
to be
on this
show. Fucking guy here?
Yeah, I want him off the show. He can actually act.
Hey,
he's making me look bad.
Can we get him out of here, please? This guy's tall, and he's good looking, and he's a really good actor. Get him the fuck out of here. This is horse shit.
As one of the other actors.
Yeah.
Hurry up, because I have a porn to shoot after this. Yeah. I've got to do anal after this. Can you hurry up?
Don't worry, we got to change the set over. You'll have time.
Yeah, I need my fluffer in here. What the hell?
I'm here.
Don't miss Supernatural The Crossroads every week on Rain Man Digital. Go to SupernaturalTheCrossroads.com for more information.
Hey guys, did you know that Rain Man Digital now offers a premium service? That's right. Besides the weekly free broadcasts, Rain Man Digital now offers a premium service. And when you pledge to our Patreon page, you automatically become a subscriber. So it's easy. The premium service includes video content, plus additional exclusive shows like Star Trek from the Holodeck, Comic Book Chaos, DC on CW bonus shows, woohoo!
Everybody's favorite.
Supernatural The Crossroads, and more. So head on over to patreon.com/rainmandigital and sign up today.
And we always have those bonus shows out there, and if you guys are a subscriber and you want to suggest something for DC on CW to cover, go ahead and tweet at us. Let us know. We're happy to cover whatever you guys want. We're open to it. What do you guys want to hear from us? Let us know.
Have you ever wanted something so bad that you do just about anything for it?
Well, that's exactly how we feel about you. That's right. AdamandEve.com wants you so bad. We're giving you 10 free gifts with your first order. You heard me right. That's 10 free gifts to spice up your love life. First, you'll get a sexy surprise for her. Second, an adventurous toy for him. And third, a little something we know you'll both enjoy. Plus, you'll get 6 full-length adult movies on DVD. And number 10, free shipping on your entire order. That's 10 free gifts for you shy types who've never tried Adam and Eve before. Just go to AdamandEve.com and select any one item. It could be an adventurous new toy, a sexy piece of lingerie, or anything you desire. Just enter offer code DEAL30 at checkout, and you'll get all 10 free gifts, including free shipping. That's offer code DEAL30. That's DEAL30 at AdamandEve.com.
Well, I'm not plotting to kill Barry Allen. I'm listening to Rain Man Digital's DC on CW.
Guys, we are back. We're gonna jump right into Legends of Tomorrow Season 3, Episode 3, Zari. Directed by Merzi Almas and written by James Egan and Ray Tarnichet.
How many directors do we put question marks after?
Question mark? So, we start out this episode with a distress call from Gary. Gary.
God, he's so fucking annoying.
It's so annoying. And so, you know, we're in 2042, Argus is highly militarized, and it seems like being different is real bad. It's just, you know, no religion, no metas, no nothing. Don't be different at all.
And that, unfortunately, I could see a time when that really happens, because
yeah,
it seems like everybody's offended by something, so make everything illegal.
Right, if it keeps progressing in an extreme way.
Yeah.
Jesus. So the team finds out that Argus is taking metas, and it's not just a prison that they're holding them at. It's not just, oh, you're a meta, so you shouldn't be out in the world. We're protecting mankind. It's nope. They're experimenting on them. It's a barbaric experimental, you know, prison where they're researching, but they're experimenting on the prisoners against their will. So that's really cool.
Got that going for you.
Yeah. So, which is nice. It's just, all right. So there were some people comparing this to a storyline in X-Men. I just think that it's too broad of a story type. Yeah. Or like it's too easy of a story type for it to just be like, oh, that's copycatted from X-Men.
Everybody always, I think that's like the you know, the jump to the conclusions, Matt. That,
yeah.
Of course, DC's copying Marvel. Not like Independence Day or anything else,
right.
So where they've captured people that were different and done experiments on them and they were frozen or whatever for so long in some secret lab.
Exactly. I think the word I was looking for a minute ago was basic. It's such a basic story plot, like a basic story device, and it's used so often and in so many different things. Anything that's different, they're taking it and experimenting on it. No, that's bad. You can't treat things like that.
Free them. It's not a prison.
That's like saying, you know, saving the princess from a castle is automatically copying Disney.
Yeah.
Well, no, because that's something, it's a plot device. And it's a plot device that happens all the time. And
that's time tested.
Marvel didn't create it. X-Men didn't create it. You know, the people writing those stories didn't create that plot device.
Yeah.
It's been there.
It's just always like that jump that you see, that somehow there's always this line between.
Listen, they have copied each other back and forth, and they will continue to do so.
Yeah, yeah.
It just happens. Marvel did it with the last relaunch thing that DC did, where they, you know, they were like, okay, we're doing Rebirth and we're kind of resetting things back to a canon that you can remember, characters that you can remember. They're the characters you know again. And Marvel went, oh, that's a pretty good idea. Huh.
Yeah.
And then they did their, you know, Generations and Legacy thing. Which,
wait, do you think that'll work for us?
Yeah. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like,
oh, all right. We're doing it.
They're the big two of, you know, superhero and super powered comic book characters.
Yeah.
They go back and forth. It happens. All right. So with Legends, you know, there's sometimes a question of whether what's happening is a repercussion of their screw ups in the timeline, or if, you know, that's really how things are playing out. And I think with this episode, there is definitely a question of, do you think society is going to really play out this way, or did they screw something up?
Yeah.
But unfortunately, like you said, I feel like if people keep going like extreme with everything, one of the actresses from Riverdale had to apologize for posting a photo on Instagram of she was like, this is going to be my Halloween costume. Like, it matches my soul. And it was someone, I don't know if it was her, but it was a picture of someone in full black. I'm talking like the actual pigment black, not someone with lots of melatonin in their skin.
Uh-huh.
The color black, painted from head to toe, looking, you know, like demonic, or like a drow, or like a night elf, or like an evil spirit or a demon or whatever. And they had like long nails that looked like claws, and it was very obviously supposed to be like a supernatural type of like creepy makeup.
Yeah.
Like a monster.
Uh-huh.
And people accused her of glorifying blackface. That's not blackface. Yeah. Blackface is painting yourself with the intent of imitating and or mocking a person of, air quotes here, black skin tone. You know, whether it's African descent or you know, like Jamaican or what have you. That is not the same. Supernatural, special effects, fantasy makeup does not equal. That's like saying, you know, oh, don't paint yourself blue because, or, you know, don't paint yourself the color yellow, like bright neon yellow, because you're, that's yellow face and you're trying to be Asian.
Yeah.
Okay. But Asians aren't actually yellow, just like black people aren't actually the pigment black.
Especially, again, if it was just a, like you said, some kind of demon, some kind of alien. What is the big deal? Like, people are pushing it.
That's
way too
reaching,
far.
And that's that poor girl, because she was just like blackface is freaking terrible.
Yeah,
and unacceptable.
We at DC on CW do not accept blackface,
right,
as a costume.
I would, on behalf of any of my friends that are black or any ethnicity, I would punch someone in the face if I saw them with blackface on. But yes, that's not the same thing. And there's like, you know, body paints in like Halloween stores and stuff like that, that are meant for like, sporting events or costumes or whatever. And, you know, red's totally fine and green's totally fine and blue's totally fine. But the second that the color on the package gets to black and the person on it has their whole face and body painted black, like there's one where the person, it's a guy and he's shirtless and his whole like arms, stomach, chest, neck, face are all covered in this black cream body paint. And you can very easily tell that it's supposed to be like a sporting event thing or like a costume thing. And it's pitch black. It's not brown. And the guy doesn't have, you know, big red lips or something like that. You know, like, it's not a race thing. That is not a race thing. Blackface is a thing. Blackface is a problem. Blackface has a horrible bit of history in America and has happened in other countries as well. And that's gross. But this is different than that. Not everything is a racially charged piece of crap.
Yeah.
But if things keep going that way, in an extreme way, such as that, society could potentially get there.
Yeah.
It's not implausible.
No, it's really not. Because you just see how sensitive people are today versus 5 years ago or 10 years ago.
There's an obvious difference in intent there and what that is intended to be. And even black people were like, okay, well, now I'm kind of offended that you equate demons with black people.
Yeah.
Like, half joking there. You never know with this show, whether it's just a repercussion of what they've done, or could society really go there?
Yeah.
Let's talk about Zari. We meet Zari this episode, and Kuwasa, our crazy water lady, is attempting to take her out. She's hunting her down. Now this is the first time we've gotten an addition to the team in quite a while.
Yeah.
Last season we got Nathaniel and Amaya, Steel and Vixen. And they were more replacement than addition.
Yeah.
Because we've got a full roster now and now we're adding one on still.
Yeah, it was, you know, Captain Cold died and then the cock people disappeared.
No. But okay, so but now is Zari just an early replacement to fill the void before we lose someone?
Yeah, because we just read the article.
Kill me.
We're setting it up.
Oh, my heart.
It almost makes more sense to Jax because she's a techie type. Mm-hmm. You know, would that go with the engineering type that could possibly replace Jax because she has the technical know-how and the time ship and from the future to where she might already know some of this stuff?
Dang it.
Jax is, it's pointing more towards Jax the more we talk.
Oh, boy.
Sorry,
right.
Jax.
All right. So, Zari Tomas, the team, after finding her, wants to use her. Of course, you know, she's got skills. But she wants a little something in return and wants to get her brother out of that meta prison.
So we think.
We've got an article from comicbook.com. That's posing the question, will Zari's brother become Osiris on this show? Because he is Osiris. But will we see him become Osiris? So in the comics, Amon is his name. He was similarly imprisoned. It was during the 52 event, which was like a 52-issue long event. Amon was tortured and crippled by Whisper Adair after he refused to join Intergang. Zari, as Isis, is able to rescue him with the aid of Black Adam, but they're unable to heal the wounds that he suffered in captivity. So to save him, Amon is struck by Shazam's lightning and is transformed into the hero Osiris. Tonight's episode that we're discussing, Zari's claim that her brother is in an Argus prison turns out to be a ruse. She needed to get into the facility to get a necklace that belonged to her brother. It's kind of a white lie-ish. No, it was more than that, but she calls it a white lie. So she says that her brother's dead, but she hasn't been completely forthcoming, so...
Are we expanding the universe that much, or is it another article looking into it just because everybody wants the whole, you know, Shazam, Black Adam thing to be
right? It's a valid question.
It almost feels like the Batman articles we get for, like, Arrow sometimes.
And here's the thing. Just because her brother is or could be Osiris, and Black Adam and Shazam could be... existing doesn't mean that we have to see them. They could talk about them and we could never see them. You know, we've had hints dropped and like Easter eggs for Green Lantern and nothing. You know,
a friend over in a different city that, you know, like, oh, I wonder who that is.
Friend of a friend and mentioning Bloodhaven and all sorts of things like that. You know, just because they exist doesn't mean they're going to get screen time. Just because they talk about them doesn't mean that we're going to ever get someone cast as them and see them. So everything is possible. You know, you never know. And maybe we meet him and she talks about how he's Osiris and we just meet him briefly and then he goes bye-bye. You know, maybe we never even see him as Osiris. All these possibilities. They're pretty much endless with this type of show. So the other major story about this episode in the real world is how, you know, a Muslim superhero was introduced on TV. We've only got a few Muslim superheroes that are in existence and beyond that widely known. You know, I would argue that at this point, Kamala Khan as Miss Marvel is the most recognizable one.
Yes.
And
that was what, 2 years ago, 3 years ago? How long has that been now?
Oh, boy. I think it's been about 4 years.
God damn, I'm getting old.
Because that Miss Marvel mantle has been held by her for a few years now. Okay. That was part of Marvel Now.
Okay.
Which was around the same time as New 52.
Okay.
I could be wrong. It's anywhere between, you know, 2 to 4 years.
I believe you. I just have no concept of time anymore.
Me either. That's why I'm like, I don't know. So there's that. Dr. Fate most recently was an Egyptian kid. And that run, it wasn't really great, but still an Egyptian kid. And then now Isis, while not really a widely known character, still she will be now. You know, now they're stepping away from the name Isis because of how it's been completely tarnished by a terrorist organization. But we still have that character. We have Zari on screen now. She's a Muslim superhero on TV, and that's a big deal, and that's cool.
Yeah.
So this article talks about, you know, since the beginning of the show, this is a quote from Guggenheim, since the beginning of this show, we've long recognized that there was not a lot of estrogen on the bridge of the Wave Rider, so it was sort of on our bucket list of to-do items. We really, really wanted to bring on another female character. We always knew it was going to be a show where people would come and go. And we've, you know, changed the dynamic of the group in such an interesting way at the beginning of last season. Selfishly, it's fun to have new people on the show. It brings a real vitality to us in the writer's room, having to figure out how this person is going to affect the dynamics on the show. But now we've got Zari. And they talked about how, you know, when creating this dystopian landscape, we held a mirror up to 2017. And I would argue that it's a slightly distorted mirror.
Yeah.
Because I don't think we're there yet.
Yeah, we're not sending people away like concentration camp style.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically what they did.
Right. So let's see. The character's full name, Zari Adriana Tomas, is a nod to Isis's past alter egos in the comic canon. I make no secret of the fact that I love the Shazam/Isis hour from when I was growing up, Guggenheim shared. It was very important to me that certain elements from the Saturday morning show were reflected, but, you know, modernized and updated. Part of that lore involves the ancient Egyptian amulet, which is the source of Isis's powers. And it's interesting because it's normally worn as a headband, but it comes in the form of a necklace belonging to her late brother.
Yeah.
No, I don't know. And we see that there's a link to Amaya's totem.
Do you think we'll get the headband? Like, do you think they'll ever make like a comic nod?
You know, I don't know. Then maybe they'll make a nod to it. Do I think she'll wear it as a headband? Not necessarily.
Yeah.
That seems a little on the nose at this point with like, I don't know, Egyptian culture or anything like that. You know what I mean? Like, it's that seems like, ooh, look how exotic this is. It's a headband. You know what I mean?
Like, you can go on. Yes, I know.
Since
what you
it's
mean.
A necklace now, why change it?
Yeah. No, I understand. And it just makes sense for like the totem purposes of how they're kind of linking the two together.
It makes it a visual connection. Yeah, for sure. All right. So, I mean, we've still got to see how she fits in with the rest of the legends. We've got a ways to go with this dynamic and how things are going to change up. But already, you know, I mean, we've seen her hacktivist skills. And then she's got this totem, which we still have to see the full extent of the totem's powers.
Yeah.
We don't really know what that means for her.
How come every time they introduce a new female that it seems like Mick is drawn to whatever she is? Like, because I thought that last year with Vic, you know, when they brought Amaya on, that I'm like, oh, is there going to be a relationship between her and Mick? You know, because they were hanging out together and everything, and it just seemed like it was going that way. Huh. And then even when they did this where we saw them in the bar scene and everything else, he seemed to be interested in her, or he felt like he had somebody that he has something in common,
you know,
with.
I think a lot of it just comes from the fact that Mick used to be this hard ass that was too good for feelings or connection with other people.
Uh-huh.
And I think a lot of that was probably really focused at women, because women are known for being the empathetic and emotional ones. And they're the ones that want to talk about their feelings and this and that. So I really think that that a lot of that comes from what his perceived notion of relations between men and women are or should be or whatever, and how he has been taught to approach them. You know, I'm just going to go have a one night stand and this and that. And that's what I don't want to say that he thinks like that's what women are for.
Mm-hmm.
But I think you see where I'm getting at with this.
Yeah.
You know, like it's not that he thinks women are objects necessarily, but I think he was like, well, men don't share their feelings and this and that. And women just want to talk about their feelings. So there's no point in having a friendship with a woman and whatever. And it is a little misogynistic in its core, but
so is Mick.
But I think he's broken out of a lot of that, though.
Yes,
and I think
definitely.
He's grown so much that now he doesn't view women as specifically women per se. But, you know, I think he just goes, oh, this is a cool new person, or oh, this is, you know, whatever. And he's sort of steered away from just calling people by a superficial descriptor as a nickname and things like that. So I think it has a lot to do with his growth as a character and a person on the show more mm-hmm. than anything else. I think he's also the least judgmental right off the bat as far as people's flaws or what other people would consider
negative things. Because he spent his whole life getting judged.
Yeah. And so he's just like, oh, cool. She hacks things. That's neat. All right, moving on. You know, whereas other people are like, oh, the morals about that. He doesn't think about things the same way. So he's less judgmental about what other people would perceive as negative things or shortcomings or moral flaws. I think that has a lot to do with it.
Okay.
So last week, the team seemed to just all kind of be bumbling idiots and they, you know, couldn't really figure anything out. But this week, they focused and they did a lot better. Everyone got a job that went along with their powers or played to their strengths and personality traits.
I was so happy with it, too, because, again,
the Legends got their groove back.
Yeah. Yeah. Quickly, which is a good thing, because, again, it was just like last week, we're just so dumbfounded how they couldn't capture a fucking tiger.
and you know what? I think honestly, like, yeah, that it took it a step too far. I think they took it to an extreme we didn't need to go to. But it wouldn't be unreasonable to think that maybe their teamwork or just their individual skills wouldn't be totally honed and on par with where they used to be after a long, mundane break.
I guess so. Because we don't always, when we come back, we're not always like on fire.
Right.
We tend to talk over each other and it takes a while to get back into the groove of things. So I guess I could buy that. It just didn't seem like it was written that way, though.
It was written goofy. It was written campy and over the top with it, is the issue.
It was written like somebody hated fucking circuses, and that's all they wanted to talk about.
So, I mean, but this week, they got it back on track. Nate and Amaya, they had a little bit of a rebonding session. You know, they did drugs together. They went on a trip together.
A little psychedelic trip.
Yeah, a little psychedelic trip. So, that was cool because it was a little bit of comic relief, but still advancing Amaya's story with her problems with her totem.
Yes.
You know, and it was
it was done really, really well.
It was. And it was adding comic relief to an otherwise not dull, but almost brooding type of story.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, not brooding. That's not even the right word. Just kind of dark.
Yeah, it was lightened up what we weren't really sure what was going on there.
Religion's not allowed. Being different in any way, like having powers is not allowed. And Argus is this horrible entity that's experimenting on people. You know, that's rough.
Yeah.
So this was where we got the break from that and the comic relief. And I think watching Nate be comedic like that was good. It was fun.
Well, that, and like you said, it kind of brought them back together as, you know, Nate and Amaya again, because he was willing to take a psychedelic first, you know, to make sure it was okay for her, to figure out what was going on with her. You know, it was putting himself out there for her, and you just don't always see that with these, like, not these characters, but characters in general, to where, you know, they have that bond with each other.
And it was nice to see nice to see it in this way, because it was a comic relief way of bringing them back together, even if their relationship doesn't start again, you know, romantically, they still have a bond. They still care about each other, and they can still be effective and close with each other, and effective teammates.
And it was a clean way to keep them on the ship.
And especially without soap opera drama.
Yeah.
It was a great way to bring the characters back together and kind of squash any negative crap, but have them go, you know, yeah, I really care about you still. Thank you for doing this for me. Or like, of course, I'm going to be there for you. But without making it soap opera-y, without making it Arrow.
Yeah. But Nate's, you know, that performance of just being on psychedelics, it just made me.
Giving it all she's got.
Well, the engines are idling, sir.
Yeah.
You know, and it just everything about that was just, I don't know. It made me laugh. And,
good.
What did he yell like? I love peanut butter and you need some tea, sir. You're my best friend. Let's
go. I want
go.
Your face.
Yeah. You just, ooh, yeah. Whatever he was idea. Saying, it was just like, oh my gosh, look at this.
Well, and when
I've never done any kind of psychedelic, but I would like, you always wonder, like, is this what it's really like?
Well, it would depend on the psychedelic,
I guess.
But I don't know. It was good. I liked it. It was fun.
Even the way they did, like technical wise, with like the Steadicam shots,
yeah,
and the elongating of the bridge, or mm-hmm. you know, when
the
hallway when he's running down,
it was huge.
Yeah, and just like the way he was acting, and they like got him like with the cold sweats when like
yeah.
you know, the camera was a little out of focus, and you could just tell he was holding it when he's trying to like run down the thing.
It was really good.
Yeah, they did it really really well, in what seemed to be like really simple. You know, they didn't go over the top and, you know, Yellow Submarine it where fucking,
right.
you know, cartoons come in and he's following a bunny around that's just drawn on the ground.
So another comic relief thing that they did that they've certainly done before, but doesn't really lose its charm, was the prison break line. So Mick is kind of back to, I don't know, I just want to shoot someone or like punch someone. But they mentioned the prison break line, and this show loves to point out things that are borderline. Well, no, they are. They're breaking the fourth wall, basically. You know, it's just they've definitely mentioned prison break things before with Snart and him. And I don't think it's going to get old because it's few and far between.
Yeah. And Stein with Titanic and icebergs.
Right.
And all that other stuff.
The guy
stuff.
That designed that ship should be shot.
Yeah. You know, and it's a fun moment that, again, it doesn't take away from the show. And you're just not like, this is fucking cheesy. Why do they keep doing this?
It's just, it gives you a little, heh, and then you move on. Like, it's just a simple little laugh, and then you're like, ah, I got that. And
yeah,
you
exactly.
move on. It's great.
It's exactly how, like, Mick even delivered it.
Yeah.
Prison break.
I'm in.
Yeah.
All right, so Jax, though, is we see him do his caring thing where he releases all the prisoners. He did it for the slaves. I don't know why I'm saying it like it's a tedious or bad thing.
I was like, I don't know what you're going with
he
this.
Released the slaves and the prisoners. God, Jax. No, I mean, that's, you know, we see him really, really tapping into his own morality and his own ethics. And this is wrong. I know that we should be helping the timeline, but we have a chance to change something for the better, and I know that it could screw something else up, but I can't walk away from this. I can't walk away from the fact that people are being held prisoner and experimented on. You know, that's not okay.
Yeah.
Tell me you wouldn't do the same thing. So, and
it's good that they keep to the core of what Jax is. You know, they haven't wavered off of that, because I could see people being like, well, he released the other people that were, you know, the slaves. Why wouldn't he release the prisoners that, you know?
It's because they're not all black? Is that what it is?
Well, especially when he's a meta himself.
Right.
You know, people tend to forget that. But yeah, he's a meta. So, of course, these are his people also.
Yeah, I do like that our characters have obvious morals and ethics of their own. You know, sometimes everyone agrees, and sometimes they don't all necessarily agree, and that person has to stand up for their morals and say, no, listen, I believe in this, and here's why, and I hope that I can convince you to believe as well. I like the characters on this show. I like how they are. It's just, it's great. They're unapologetically in touch with their own moral compasses.
Yeah, and really, like I said, consistent with it. It's never, yeah. Well, I'll do it this time, but not next time.
This feels like we're back to the legends we know and love.
Yes.
All right, so before we close out our show, let's talk about the Time Bureau. How do you feel this is going? Because I thought that they were going to be, I thought there was going to be more resistance from the Time Bureau. And right now, I'm not feeling so bad about it.
I don't know what I expected. Like, I thought they would be, like, the Time Bureau would be more in a leadership role. And it just seems like the legends are on the Wave Rider doing whatever the hell they want. You know, just picking up signals here and there and jumping around.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know. Especially, like, with, the, you know, the whole, like, battling of the ships that was going on. To where it's like, I'm going to shoot you down. It's just like, your boss wants them for a reason. Who the fuck are you to try to shoot them down?
Right.
And I think that's where I'm getting confused by. It's like, are they there to help the Time Bureau? Or is the Time Bureau, like, is that chick taking it on her own to kind of hinder what
they're
supposed to do?
Is the Time Bureau supposed to be cooperating with or helping and encouraging and, like, guiding the legends? Or, like,
What is your purpose?
What is your purpose? And, like, you know, are they on the same side as the team? Are they not? What's happening? There's this rift between them, you know, like how they were, Sarah was taking a risk and they were, you know, the ship was in danger of blowing up and it was a whole thing and they were arguing. And
they're shooting at each other. Yeah. You know, they're shooting at the Wave Rider. And you're just like, I am really, really confused right now.
So are you just going to let it blow up? Like, what do you...
And they kind of established last week that Rip has them there for a purpose. We don't know what the purpose really is yet, but he wants them around, and that's the guy who's running this.
So do you think that if, I've already forgotten her name, Sarah's rival, basically, Blondie McTime Bureau, do you think if she hadn't let slip that Rip is basically, like, primping and prepping them to combat some sort of evil, if she hadn't let that slip to Sarah and to us as the viewers, do you think that we would be getting more frustrated with the presence of the Time Bureau at all at this point?
Yeah. If they didn't let that slip, I would almost be like, these are the Time Masters all over again.
Yeah, like, or what the hell is the point? What purpose do you serve? Get out of here.
Yeah.
Let the legends do their thing. Mind your business.
Yes. Especially when they're off kind of helping out, you know, Gary with his distress call and
Gary,
you know, all that stuff. It's just like, I don't know. I'm really confused about what the point of the Time Bureau is.
And what the heck is Rip doing? Where is he? I know he's a busy man. He's running an organization, but at the same time,
your organization, you know, let's get some direction here.
Yeah. Like, should they be reporting directly to Rip? I feel like they probably should if the legends are like some special unit.
Yeah.
I don't know. Like,
they almost feel like pirates right now.
Yeah, a little bit.
You know, just kind of off doing whatever they want, running into the law every once in a while, getting away with it, and then running away again.
Well, and like, the Time Bureau seems like they're a crutch to the legends, and the legends are a crutch to the Time Bureau, or, well, no, they're more like a thorn in their side, but, but like, I don't know.
It feels like the Time Bureau needs the legends more than the legends need the Time Bureau.
But are we also going to see, you know, is that always going to be the case? Or is the Time Bureau always going to be, you know, kind of the way or the reason or the whatever to get the legends to a time? Or are the legends always going to be what brings the Time Bureau to a place? And, you know, is it always going to be so tied together and so reliant on each other?
I almost hope not.
I definitely hope not.
Again, I would almost rather have them have some kind of, like, we have a dangerous mission that we need you for, you know, and working together.
Yeah.
Because we still haven't even seen them, like, share technology, really, you know, because we saw Gary kind of get out of the ship real quick when he needed to get out, you know, through his little
time window,
phaser, whatever you want to call it, you know, and it gets out of
that
the ship.
That phaser to get the fuck out?
Yeah. Beam me the fuck out of here right now.
And so, you know, I mean, I'm not at a point where I'm feeling overwhelmingly negative about the Time Bureau as a whole yet, or where the story's going and everything. But I am cautious at this point. Like, I don't think we're in that season three slump necessarily, but I... Don't fuck it up, guys.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it could go either way from here, and I don't want it to go that way. So I hope that things kind of pick up, and I hope that this the relationship between the Legends and the Time Bureau evens out, and I hope it becomes more apparent. So,
like, partnership.
Yeah. So with that, let's talk final thoughts on this episode. I personally thought it got better than from, you know, the last episode. I think things are evening out. I think things are taking a more formative shape. I think things are becoming more apparent. You know, there's obviously going to be little mysteries and what's going to happen. But I think it's finding its footing, and we'll see what happens from there.
Yeah.
Visuals are always great. You know, the writing, as far as the interaction between characters, the writing has been great as usual. It's the characters I know and love and some new ones. As far as the overall plot, we'll see how that pans out as far as the writing and the direction of that.
Yeah. Yeah, I agree. The writing is good. The dialogue always feels real natural with them. I don't always see that on, like, Arrow all the time.
Oh my god, and really quick, Ray's fucking disguise. His, like, I'm a bad guy.
Yes.
Oh my god.
Yes, and that's what's fun about this show.
That's what's good about this show.
You see that, and you see, like, the nerdy guys, stereotypical, what a bad guy look like. A patch, a bandana, and a goatee. You know, it's like, it's me, if you didn't know, you know? And it's those moments that I like, and it's the way they deliver it, and you believe that, you know, Mick's a badass. You believe that Ray's a nerd. You know, you feel that Nate and Amaya really do have a connection. It's not a forced relationship type thing.
It feels like a little family,
yeah,
where people are comfortable with each other.
Yes, and that definitely shows, again, you know, whether it's written that way or it's the way they are delivering the lines, you know, it feels natural.
Yeah.
And, you know, the circus one just bugged me last week. And it was nice that they figured out and they went back to what the formula was kind of last year. They didn't need to get everybody off the ship to go do, you know, run around to fix this. Certain people had their certain jobs. They had their other storylines to go with. And so this show was a kind of a perfect rebound for what was, for me, a lackluster episode last week. So.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm on board with everything that you said. On that note, that's it for today's DC on CW Legends of Tomorrow edition. Remember, you can always catch any past and future DC on CW episodes through the Rain Man digital app. And be sure to follow us on our social media. We've got Twitter at DC on CW, Facebook.com/DC on CW, and Instagram is at DC_on_CW. And we'll catch you next time.
Not in the mood for chit-chat. Gotcha. Ready when you are.